I feel like we use the word brolic in association with Broly. That's my own personal belief.
No, it's 100% true. We
Okay.
definitely took that from that. And I'll accept no other explanation.
Hi, I'm Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shans.
And I am Andrew Tejada, codename Arate. This season, we're looking at the worst superhero movies ever and seeing if they're fun or straight up dumb on
Cape or Cap, a bonus season of yet another DC animated podcast. Welcome to Cape or Cap, our bonus season here on yet another DC animated podcast. My name is Shamar Griffith, codename Comic Shams.
And I am Andrew Tejada, codename Arate.
Andrew and I have known each other since 1996.
That was the year the last episode of Dragon Ball Z aired in Japan.
Aw.
Yeah. Yeah. After this, some people were going to wish it stayed that way, you know? Spoilers.
Yes, this franchise has survived so much, beginning since the 80s. Oh, actually, we're celebrating the 40th anniversary of it, really. And in 96, when we ended Dragon Ball Z, a couple years later, in 2009, we received the film. It's called Film's a Stretch, but you already
Yeah, yeah. It's a... It is a collection of events on screen, certainly. Mm-hmm. We witnessed all of it.
That's right, because for today's Cap or Cape season episode, we're talking about the movie that basically not only ended live-action adaptations of Dragon Ball for a while, or actually in general. This one was also, I feel like we should have known that this was the warning sign of bad live action adaptations of anime that will just run the 2010s. I think because between like this movie, Death Note, I think Full Metal Alchemist came out around the same time too. This was the movie that started it all, Dragon Ball Evolution. Notice I said Dragon Ball, not Dragon Ball.
Oh man, the names in this movie. We'll get there.
Yes. Because at a runtime of 85 minutes, we got this 2009 film directed by James Wong. This would be his last movie directing on the big screen.
Yes, not James Wong, guys. James Wong. We want to make that very clear. Yes. This is not James Wong.
W-O-N-G. We're spelling that correctly. but prior to this film... he also directed the first and third films in Final Destination. Kind of seems fitting that he's directed films about people killing off things. Oh. We got Jet Li's The One. But he does make good stuff, I will say, because I did enjoy Jet Li's The One. But more importantly, he made some great stuff by famously writing for a great number of episodes of The X-Files.
Yeah, you know, sometimes writers... You know, writers are important, and sometimes writers might like writing more than making adaptations of anime.
Very true. Speaking of writers, we got the writer of the screenplay here, Ben Ramsey. He's known for writing Mark Wahlberg's A Big Hit. He wrote and directed Love and a Bullet, starring Treach from Naughty by Nature. That's the rap group, you know, educating y'all out there. He also directed Blood and Bone, starring Michael J. White. And this one, funny thing about this, Blood and Bone, I realized, came out the same year as Dragon Ball Evolution. So this might explain some things.
Maybe it's working some things out.
Yeah. but most importantly, this was my favorite thing about this. Ben here worked on the art department for Don't Be a Menace in South Central while drinking your juice in the hood.
I mean... Everything looks ghetto as hell in terms of production design. So if that's what he was going for, sure.
We usually don't do this, but I do want to give a special shout out to one of the executive producers, as we got the late, great Akira Toriyama, RIP Sensei, who upon the release of this movie, actually apologized for what happened and immediately went to work right after and started writing and putting together several animated movies dedicated to this universe after he finished Z already. And even started off with the sequel series that we know from Super to Superhero. And I know he must have been tight because, like, this whole movie should have basically been like an easy paycheck for him. And it literally led to him having to do more work.
Yeah, I can't understate how much of how influential Akira Toriyama was and his series was into bringing anime to the West and to getting, I know myself personally, into anime. He did that, and it is just a shame that a movie exists that will turn you away from anime permanently.
Yeah, it's very true. And yes, not gonna downsize the impact that Akira has had. Like, I'm literally recording this episode right now wearing like a Dragon Ball Z hoodie, semi-dressed as Goku. I tried. I really tried.
I got a
But yeah.
monkey tail temporarily implanted for this, you know?
But yeah.
There's more than the movie.
Oh man. But all right, in that case, we're just gonna jump right into this movie. Really starting with the cast list because we got Justin Chatwin as Goku. Justin would later go on to be a star in the show Shameless, which is saying a lot about his portrayal of Goku in here. Chow Yun-fat is Master Roshi. You know him from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, and a lot of martial arts films that really broke out here in the West Side of the world in the early 2000s. Emma Rossum will actually end up joining Justin in Shameless as she's here today as Bulma, which is really hilarious that these two were in this movie and about 2 years later end up being in Shameless. I feel like this had to be like a Saturday project for them.
Yeah, and they also hung out with the Joker, the future Joker, prototype Joker, Cameron Monaghan.
Oh my God. Yes, very true. Luckily, he was not in this film, but someone who, to me personally, gives very similar energy. We got James Marsters, who is playing King Piccolo. I just found out after watching this film that was him.
Yeah, yep, he is thankfully unrecognizable in that makeup.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, look out, Suicide Squad. You're lucky this didn't come out in 2016.
You could have won an Oscar.
We got Joon Park. He is a South Korean pop star and actor known for being a part of the group G.O.D. or God. I'm not entirely too sure how to pronounce it. But today he is Yamcha. Erica Tamura is Mai. We're gonna
She
freeze.
was
Yeah.
that was my okay. I didn't even bother to look up who she was playing. Wow, that's an interpretation.
Yeah, if you're a Dragon Ball fan, you know. And if you're not a Dragon Ball fan, we will tell you soon, very, very soon. Randall Duck Kim, known famously as Master Oogway in the Kung Fu Panda series. Today he is playing Grandpa Gohan, or Gohan, as they pronounce it in the movie.
Yeah, when as long as he's alive.
Another big star during this time, and I feel like she has been in so many movies that it is countless just to kind of go through her resume right now. But Jamie Chung, she is here today playing the role of Chi Chi, the, as we know in the Dragon Ball series, the future wife and amazing fighter of sorry, the future wife of Goku and the amazing fighter she already is.
Yeah, I think she fought her way out of the bad reputation of this movie. I think she had the most solid
Oh yeah.
follow-up career next to James Marsters, I think, after this.
Yeah, I definitely like I again like it there was like it's been so long since I've seen this movie, mainly because I've been avoiding it for so long that these two were like people who I did not expect to see in this film. Including the last person that we have on our list. This was such a surprise for me because when I saw him, I thought it was him, and I was like, nah, that can't be. He wouldn't do this. Currently, he has been killing it in Ghostbusters. He was the first black Ghostbuster, was a hero to all when it came to busting ghosts and everything. Today, we got Ernie Hudson in the very short role of Sifu Norris.
Well, yeah, okay.
Won't let you ponder that anymore. Let's, all right, well, with that, we're just gonna instant transmission to the beginning of Dragon Ball Evolution.
Like all great movies, it opens with narration. And look, we could sit here like CinemaSins and ding every inaccuracy in this, but we're gonna try to not do too much of that because we'd be here for 7 hours. But in this universe, again, we're gonna ignore, we know all of this is wrong in advance,
Oh, yes.
but we're just gonna cover it as it's presented to us. So in this universe, thousands of years ago, Piccolo comes from his home planet, brings a great ape to Earth as his number two guy. Together, they're just wreaking havoc on Earth. And that stopped when they use a technique called the Mafu Ba, which captured him like Rita, Repulsa, and Power Rangers, and he was captured for like 1,000 years. What happened to the great ape? Don't worry about it. All right, it's not important because that I don't know what happened to the great ape that was with him. Did it die? Was it supposed to be Goku's ancestor, and then it
I
didn't.
haven't. I'm still trying to wrap my mind over the fact that it was seven mystics who created the seven Dragon Balls,
Oh,
honestly.
I blacked out. I must have blacked out at that part. Yeah, so it this is the backstory. Okay, I have to do this one. In the original source material, this is like a 60-year difference, and it turned into thousands of years for no reason. Okay.
No
All right.
reason. No,
Gotta contain it. Gotta
it's
contain it.
okay. It's okay.
Ugh.
It's okay. Bring it back in. Evil containment
Okay.
wave this energy.
Okay, I will bafu ba. That all happens. So after we get the narration, we cut to modern day, which is in the future, but also not. Which is the Dragon Ball aesthetic to be, it's futuristic, but it's also has elements of like rural societies. So it's kind of getting there, but the problem is it leans too much on the future side of it. So it does look like it's the future, but not in any case, in the future, but not a teenage Goku is training with
This
Master
man, no.
Gohan, not
No,
Gohan.
thank you. Also, I want to say that Goku in this, they treat him as a teenager, but this man look older than Commandy. Yeah, they say that he's younger than Commandy.
Oh my, especially when he does that forehead vein thing.
Oh God, yeah.
He just gains 16 years.
Yeah. This man goes through stress. But like you were mentioning, it's Goku, he is training with his grandfather, Gohan, not Gohan. It's a fun little scene because the two of them are on like tight ropes trying to like battle it out. They're using what is supposed to be representations of ki, which is basically in this movie, giant gust of energy. Not sorry, not energy, giant gust of wind. You see how I said energy because it's supposed to be energy? A light bulb could have worked here, people. And we learned the thing that comes out of this is just like the two of them are having fun. Grandpa Gohan is just basically saying that like when you're fighting in this particular matchup with me, the rules are there are no rules. So it's just like basically anybody could die and it's okay because there are no rules. That's almost how much I interpret it as. Goku ends up losing. However, right before he does kick a bug into his grandfather's mouth, which distracts him, but he still loses. That's not the point. This is when he's like, all right, I gotta go, gotta get ready for school. And this was the first time I was like, I remember the first time watching this, I was just like, wait, hold up, Goku was educated?
Yes, this is one of the odd changes because the reason why Goku is known as this fighter in the series is because he's left alone for a large portion of his life, and all he does is fight. He doesn't really get an education, and fortunately for him, it turns out that he's the one of the strongest people on Earth. So we kind of need him to keep fighting. So that works out for him. So here he just goes to school, and he keeps telling us, that he's an odd teenager. He seems like a normal teenager, honestly. Like
Honestly, yeah.
he has a book bag, he's going to school, he's got a little motorbike.
Yeah.
So he seems pretty relatively normal. And there's also a line here where he promises his grandpa Gohan that he won't fight if he gets in trouble at school. If you want to turn off the movie at this point and leave, we understand. Because if you know anything about Goku, he's fighting. He'll
Right.
fight anybody at any time. Like it's on sight. He'll fight
Like,
maybe
you have
not
fist? Right. It was like, you have fist? Goku will fight you. Do you not have fist? Goku
Yamcha. It doesn't on sight.
will fight you.
And but he'll ask. And Goku says all he wants is to be normal and get girls. Even if this wasn't a butchering of a character, that would be a horrible motivation to introduce your hero. And after all this whining and complaining, he is gifted a Dragon Ball from one of the seven mystic Dragon Balls. He's just handed it, and Grandpa Gohan says, "Take that to school, son." And that now we're at school where Goku is almost killed.
Because as he parks his bike, he gets off of it, he's immediately run over by, I'm assuming this was a Camaro, mainly because of everything that was happening with Transformers, which I think the third Transformers film may have come out at this point, so everybody was really into Camaros at this point. So he gets run over by, well, sorry, his bike, not him. I'm assuming this was trying to be a play on the fact of when Bulma almost ran him or actually hit him with the car. But it does not work out well. So he gets upset. He tries to fight these bullies. One of which was played by a man by the name of Texas Battle. Like, that is his legit acting name. And I'm just like, I feel like you chose the wrong career path.
Points for originality, buddy.
But Goku does hold back. And this is mainly because Chi Chi, who's played by Jamie Chung here, she walks in, kind of pulls everybody away because it seems to be that she's in a relationship with Texas or a situationship, whatever is happening here. So while in school, Goku is getting an education. He's learning about the solar eclipse. At the same time, we see basically King Piccolo. Actually, wait, did they call him King Piccolo in this movie?
I don't remember.
All right.
Yeah,
We're gonna call him King Piccolo because that's what I know in my heart. All right. King Piccolo's on his ship. He's investigating, trying to find the rest of the Dragon Balls. He's joined by his henchwoman Mai. They're all on this journey. He eventually drops like some kind of energy bomb into which looks basically like a condensed form of a fart, down into somebody, into like a little country's area and everything. I'm assuming, because they never actually show it, that it destroys everything and blows everything up. So they try to find, there's these two individuals who are trying to find sanctuary in there. It seems to be like a woman and a young child, possibly her daughter. So they hide underneath, and we see that Mai is down there now searching for the other Dragon Ball that they detected down there. And she, Mai, finds it, brings it back up to King Piccolo. And basically, we go back to Goku learning about solar eclipses. He's not paying attention because, and I gotta say, this entire setup of him looking at Chi Chi and there are like flowers blooming in the background. I feel like this was the introductory, this was probably the same school as the Twilight movies. Something about this looks so familiar, and this is when I was just like, this movie's rubbing me the wrong way.
Yeah, she's eating strawberries in his fantasy. Is that a metaphor? Is that an innuendo? I'm not sh like
Don't
a
know, maybe now.
carrot,
Yeah.
like his
Oh,
name Kakarot, but that might have been actually too much. But I would have applauded them for the boldness if they had gone for it. Goku's daydream of strawberries is rudely interrupted when he is asked about the eclipse and what do you do during an eclipse? And instead of saying "Don't stare at the sun like any normal person," he says his grandpa told him "Beware the Nameks, an alien race that invaded Earth." How would they know this? I don't know. I can't ask that question, but that's what he knows. He kind of rehashes the opening. That won't be the first time, don't worry. And immediately we cut to outside of class where Chi Chi is having trouble with her locker. So Goku opens it with a ki blast, and Chi Chi immediately calls him out. He tries to hide, but he's too slow to get away in time, or Chi Chi's really fast. Either or, in a line that is going right up here in the Hall of Lame with X-Men and X-Women saving the day all the time. Chi Chi says, "Just because my name is Chi Chi doesn't mean I'm stupid." If anybody out there with your name is Chi Chi, I'm sorry that this line was
Yeah.
written. I made no assumptions on you based your name, and I won't. I'm making assumptions of whoever wrote that line or edited it. Why did you do this?
Agree, because like this is also I've heard this nickname before, and then it has never actually even been associated with Dragon Ball or any of the storytelling. So the fact that you can, someone had the audacity to stand there and write this line and was like, "Hell yeah, I cooked it," and throw it into the movie, this was really, really dumb because it then leads into Goku, trying to defend it by saying that I didn't think you're dumb, but in his comment, he still's like calling her dumb. And it's just like, I understand that they're trying to give the guy who's super attracted to this girl says dumb things, but a lot of this ended up just being insulting to Chi Chi. But somehow it wins her over to the point where she's just like, hey, I'm having a party later on. You should come by. So Goku is just getting ready. He's back at home. He's trying to look as normal as possible, which I'm like, to me, I'm just like, I don't get it because it's not like you're not normal. Like you're a pretty average dude if you really look at yourself. Like no one's gonna know anything different about you. He even tries using some hair glue to slick his hair back a lot because he does in the movie have like it's not the typical Goku haircut. But it's just basically a very high cut fade that you probably see a lot of people were wearing during the 2010s, honestly. So he tries slicking his hair back. Unfortunately, as a sight gag, the hair is just too strong. So it flicks all the hair glue back up onto the thing. And this is when you hear that that Grandpa Gohan is just like basically prepping dinner for what's supposed to be Goku's 18th birthday. But Goku has plans, and he's just like, he just really wants to go and be a normal teenager.
Yeah, he had to miss out on all that delicious chicken feet that Grandpa Gohan was making. Oh, I he looked like he was seasoning it. I'm not gonna lie, the way
I will say, yeah.
he was looking at that, I was like, maybe I'd give it a shot. What's weird about this scene is Goku leaves without saying goodbye, and in normal movies, in this kind of scenario, the teenager has been banned from doing the
Right.
thing or get in trouble from doing the thing. Here he just skips out on his grandpa with no explanation, no reason at all.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why he can't say goodbye. I'm gonna step out for like 5 minutes. You were allowed to go.
This man did not have a curfew, unlike most of us who were watching this movie at two in 2009. Like, come on.
Right, we would have gotten more trouble. So Goku gets to the party. Immediately, it's on site with these bullies. They're more Goku than he is because they try to take him on in a fight. When the lead guy pours out a glass of water to intimidate Goku, and my nephews have outgrown this. Like maybe 3 years ago, they're like at age four, they would pour water on the floor and just look at you and just mischievously. Yeah, so that's what I thought of when he did that. I was like, that's what my nephews would do when they were 4 years old. So instead of fighting them, Goku just dodges them so they hit each other. At one point, the Fuller comes out of the house, and because Goku is dodging so artfully, Fuller destroys his own car. And everything here is rendered in slow-mo for no apparent reason. And after the scene, after all the bullies are down, Chi Chi says, "Hey, Goku, thanks for humiliating my boyfriend. Come on in."
So they head on over to what is the most massive place. This is definitely a 2000s movie because it's just like these kids are just partying in basically what's a mansion. There's a fountain connected to a pool, and they just have free rein. I'm not sure if they were showing alcohol usage. That's the only thing I'm not sure about in this film. But as they're just talking, it's now just Chi Chi and Goku. They're talking about the struggles of being different when it's just like, no, you're not. And then it's like they're talking about fighting and how great it is. And I was just like, we have yet to see y'all actually execute great fighting skill. And also about Ki, which I mean, I guess we saw. I'm also confused as to why Chi Chi knows so much about Ki, and yet it's just like hardly ever explained.
Does she even use Ki in this movie?
No, that's my main issue. I was gonna talk about that later, but I was just like, all right, we're talking about this shit now. Because it's like she talks about Ki like it's like literally the thing that she uses every day. Like she pours a cup of water, she's using Ki to do it. Yet she never uses it once in the movie. She never shows that her family is using it at any point during the movie. She just says, I know what it is. And I was like, okay, cool. I know what a solar eclipse is, but I don't have the power to wield it. So it's like, I don't understand why the dialogue is forcing us to just have it be that Goku and Chi Chi have to bond over fighting here. Like, yes, that's also very similar to what was happening in Dragon Ball. Like, they bonded over the two of them being able to fight against each other. But the way that is being done here, it just seems like Chi Chi is talking about things and is trying in a way trying to explain it to Goku, and Goku is not, I don't know, it just feels like the conversation about it isn't authentic enough to be that this should be the thing that they bond over. Where I wish it was just like, hey, did you watch, I didn't realize you were a fighter, did you do you like watching fights and tournaments and all that? Oh, did you check out this one? I feel like the connection should have been more so, this is the things I gravitate towards, not something that has ancestral connection that somehow may also influence the fate of the world.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it just is not. There's really no payoff to this. Also, there's a parrot at the party. I just have to
Oh,
mention that there's
yeah.
a parrot there. I what the parrot doesn't do anything. Why is a parrot there? It's not a reference to anything. Like,
I think it's just to show, like, hey, this is rich people. And I was like, I feel like a giant mansion could have done that.
yeah, I think we got the hint. So elsewhere, Piccolo pulls up to Grandpa Gohan's house because. Yes, so that pause is because this doesn't make sense. So Piccolo has some innate ability to sense Dragon Balls, which we can accept. He doesn't in the. We can accept it. For this movie, he
Yeah,
does.
for the movie, we can't.
Knowing that he can sense the Dragon Balls, why would he go to Grandpa Gohan's house? Because Goku had the Dragon Ball. So why did he go to the house? It doesn't
Yeah,
make
like
any sense.
I feel like the essence would have been stronger since Goku has been traveling with it the entire day versus like the last time it was there was literally almost at this point 8 hours ago. Like it can't be that the energy is that strong as you couldn't sense it had traveled.
Yeah, that doesn't really make sense for a mystical being that's supposed to be on top of his game. But anyway, he goes to the house. He defeats Gohan pretty easily and then uses the force to crush the house. Goku senses it and runs home. And while he's saving Grandpa, I also realize this is the first time in the movie when he's lifting debris that he's shown to have super strength. It's not actually clear that he has super strength until this point, which is really bad. It's really bad. Because if you're gonna do a reveal like this of super strength, then it should be at a really good moment. If
Yeah.
you're doing it for like a Hancock, like when a certain character reveals they have super strength in Hancock, great. But here it's like it's too late. It's too
Yeah.
late now.
Also, I just want to say this is basically the entire setup of every Spider-Man film we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Even the sense of the super strength reveal, like it was done way better there. Like as I was watching this film, I was thinking back to especially during the fight that he had with Fuller and the bullies that were keep coming after him. I was like, this is basically a version of Tobey Maguire Spider-Man 1. He's facing off against Flash Thompson in the against the lockers. And in that, we see the sense of the super strength, the extra abilities there. Like you said, it's done in a way where it's not only a surprise to the viewer, but it's a surprise to the person enacting the act. So when it's like, oh, he just lifts off this thing and it's not, and it's just saying that like he just has super strength. It's not a case of just like, you know, like the mother who sees her baby in trouble has like extreme adrenaline. This is a clear case that he's not like other people. And I feel like that would have been a better starting place to incorporate that, as you're saying, into the intro of his character versus I'm not like other people because I live out in the desert and I train with my grandpa, which honestly, I feel like is the story for a lot of parents when a lot of our parents, back when they were living in different countries outside of America, where it's just like, this is our stories, but this is not how we wanted it to be told.
Yeah, it's a pretty normal backstory. Gohan's dead. Great. And now he's saying, make sure you go to see Master Roshi. He'll know what to do. So Goku buries his grandpa instead of doing that. Then he goes back to his house to sleep instead of going to see Roshi. And then Bulma comes in with the using her dragon radar, shows up to get the Dragon Ball. And she gets into a quick tussle with Goku. They almost had this one too. Almost good, but she doesn't shoot him. And you know, in the original, she shoots him, he shakes it off. That's how they meet. But here, nope. She doesn't shoot him, she just threatens him. Is he strong enough to take it? We don't know
You
because they
never
don't.
know.
We don't. It's not established in this movie how durable he is. So, and I also, ironically, Bulma breaking into Goku's house, it really should be the other way around. Goku
Yeah.
should be breaking into Bulma's house. Bulma reveals that she had a Dragon Ball in Star Labs, where she works, and they were trying to make infinite energy. It's not clear that this world even needs that. I think they're doing just fine. So now she wants to help Goku find the Dragon Balls so she can make infinite energy for the world. That's her arc. And so they go do that. They go and they just go find Master Roshi right after this. There's nothing really significant happens. They just go find him.
Yeah, it's basically immediate. There's a little gag in which they do try to tap into some of the typical Goku character like arcs of things where it's just like he's eating a giant turkey leg, which I feel like in the last couple of movies that we've seen, like turkey legs are just been have just been a bad sign. It's like I don't understand why are we eating turkey legs just out in the, he's just eating it out in the street on the bike. He's questioning why Bulma can't find Master Roshi. Questions like, "Hey, did you look up Master in the white pages and everything?" It's there for 5 seconds, and then they eventually find Master Roshi as they walk up to a house that is like, I don't even really know how to describe it, because it's one, it's nothing like the Kame house at all. But what they do is just basically, it's like pure, nice, great setup, futuristic land all around him. And then somehow he just lives on a random piece of rock hanging on for dear life in a chasm.
Yeah, maybe it's like he didn't refuse to give in to gentrification, so they just
Oh.
dug around him. Maybe he's the hero of this story. But they find him, and Roshi and Goku, because he broke into his house, they get into a brief tussle, and again, it's okay, but it's also you have Chow Yun-Fat here. So the choreography should be insane
It
here.
should have been, yeah.
But it's just overabundance on slow-mo, and then they do a weird thing where Roshi moves his hands real fast and Goku can't keep up. It's not a great fight scene. So in the house, they explain everything. Roshi doesn't know where the Dragon Ball is. And it's a shame nobody there has a device that can find Dragon Balls.
Exactly.
So Goku senses it. And at this point, Roshi's like, "Hey, you know what, Goku? I think you could use a little training, actually." Because he does. So he's like, "Hey, we're gonna teach you how to master your energy, your master the elements, 'cause airbending, he mentions airbending."
He does mention airbending, and this was when, as I was watching it, I was just like, you know, there's a greater show and move, well, not movie, let me take that back, television. Greater television series set of them that have used airbending more effectively than this film will ever do.
The 2 years of Avatar, the roughest 2 years Avatar ever had, being mentioned in Dragon Ball Evolution and then the 2010 movie. No, we're not covering it. Anyway, so
That, yeah, that's an immediate case. I mean, sorry, that's an immediate cap. We're not, yeah, no.
no, there's no reason to do it. So yeah, now they go to a training camp. Chi Chi just happens to be there. Don't worry about it. And then they fall into a hole.
Yeah, we get a little quick montage of them running. Goku's like doing handstands on the car, and he's running with all their package. And then there's just a hole. We get introduced now to this to Yamcha, who he's like, "Hey, I can help you guys out for a small fee." And Bulma, she's like, "How? I don't understand how this hole could have gotten here." Goku and Roshi are just like, I mean, clearly he dug the hole in order to get us down here for some kind of compensation. And he's like, "All right, cool. I'm gonna leave y'all down there until the sun comes out, but so that you guys could all just burn up and whatnot." And now it's moonlight, which should normally in Dragon Ball telling should be the scariest point for Goku. But that's not this film.
Well, he doesn't have a tail, so.
Fair point. So this entire time they're like, this is when Bulma pulls up with her, I don't even think they call it a Dragon Ball, I think they call it a DBE or something else.
Yeah, and it's like, that's catchy. It's like, no, it isn't actually.
No. And she finds out that there is somehow a Dragon Ball in the same cavern that they're in right now. Roshi immediately jumps out the hole, and I was like, why did you not do that in the first place? And he's like, we no longer have time for your games. How about though I make you an offer if you can't refuse by giving you a third of all the earnings of what we will end up doing with this Dragon Ball. There's a quick little joke about how Bulma's upset about this, but Roshi is just like, well, a third of nothing is still nothing. So he digs through it. They find the Dragon Ball, but in order to do to get to the Dragon Ball, this is when they go to the Lake of Fire, right?
Yes.
Yeah. They have to cross, they somehow get on what's supposed to be, I'm assuming, the center of the earth and survive. Even when Piccolo, King Piccolo, uses his blood to create unseen monstrous beings. The CGI is so bad that you actually can't even see the monsters that attack them.
Yeah, they look
And
like the creatures from Power Rangers Turbo.
you know, that's what I was thinking. I was just
If
like
you know,
thinking
you
about
know.
it. But yeah, so Goku solos this whole entire mission. He uses, in the most grotesque thing I've ever seen, he uses the ripped apart bodies of the monsters that were attacking them, throws them into the lake of lava to create a bridge so he can run over and pick up the Dragon Ball that is just placed conveniently, well placed to on like a rock pillar.
Yep, Mai shows up briefly in the center of the earth to try to steal the Dragon Ball. She doesn't succeed. She has to run away. But at this point, Goku gets a vision from the Dragon Balls. Sure, that he a giant ape is going to kill all of his friends. So he's a little apprehensive about that. Meanwhile, Roshi goes to his master, Ernie Hudson, to learn the Mafu Ba, which he knows about but doesn't know how to do, apparently. We have Chi Chi briefly competing in the All Valley tournament, All Valley Karate
Thank you.
tournament.
Thank you for saying that.
And then Yamcha and Bulma have a romantic scene. If it sounds like bullet points, it is. These are just the events in the movie. There's no coherence. There's no tying them together in any progression. These are the events of the movie as presented to us. Now, it's time to learn the Kamehameha.
So we head back to a place where the group is staying for the night. And this is part of Goku's training, specifically the air bending part. We learned that the Kamehameha wave is their strongest force against King Piccolo. And I was just like, so what about the Mafuba? And this is when Roshi explains that it is a collection of energy that will then be shot out as an explosive wave. And I mean, that's just the spirit bomb, in my opinion. But for the sake of this movie, Roshi does the move. It is nothing like you have ever seen in any Dragon Ball production. Because what, and I'm going to try to explain this out as best as I can, because I had to mimic it, because I was just like, I've never been able to do the Kamehameha when I was younger. Maybe I was just doing it wrong. Maybe this movie is the one that got it accurately right. You take your wrist, put them up in the air, connect them, then you roll them towards you so that they're out. Then you stretch out your left hand, bring your other hand across your body. Thumb up is important.
Okay.
And drag it down your arm to your chest. You then repeat the same motion on the other side. And once you have done that, bring your hands up in the air, curl it, put them around your head, and use that to bring forward the energy by breathing out.
Yeah, see, by that point in the battle, you'd already be dead. So
Thank
you probably would have made it to
you.
step like
one and a half, maybe, after your opponent stops being confused at what the hell you're doing. Yeah, I don't know. The part of the appeal of the Kamehameha is that it's a simple technique. You know, it's kind of like Captain America's shield, Iron Man's repulsors, Spider-Man's web shooters. Yeah, press a thing happens. That's kind of what the Kamehameha does. There's some build-up time sometimes, but the form is very simple. It overcomplicating like this makes it impractical, absolutely impractical to use in a battle. And there's already a Dragon Ball technique that does that, so there's no need to be two.
Oh, I just want to quickly say, I did try it in person. I just tried it again now. Both times it did not work. So, unfortunately, this is just my quest continues.
To master the airbending techniques. So, Goku is instructed to use the Kamehameha, master his ki to light some torches. He tries to cheat, which is probably the most offensive thing the movie could have done to Goku. The idea that he would cheat at a physical challenge is ludicrous. It's just ludicrous. Goku does not cheat at all. So at some point, Chi-Chi sneaks in and tells him, "Goku, every torch you light, you get to take a step towards me." And with the promise of a kiss, apparently. And so Goku, in wanting to hook up with Chi-Chi so badly, masters the Kamehameha to hook up with Chi-Chi.
This was insulting. Like I have seen I'm just I just seen this before. Have actually seen this work. Actually, no, I've seen it fail many, many times. Because this is the same exact plot point as Billy Madison. And it didn't work for Hot Teacher, but it did work for the other guy that did try to get with Adam Sandler in that film. But yeah, it's bad. I feel like it does, as you're saying, this is a bad way to put Goku, because it's like he's cheating. He believes that the only way that he can master an art is through, to be frank, horniness. So it's a lot. It's a lot is happening here to Goku.
And while he's distracted, Mai sneaks in while dressed disguised as Chi-Chi, because earlier in the All Valley, she sold Chi-Chi's blood. And Mai is able to shapeshift with the blood into Chi-Chi. So
Don't
as
worry
she's
about that. I guess I'm better in My Hero Academia. Don't worry.
Oh yes. Oh my God, stolen. Retroactively stolen from the future. So the two Chi-Chis, as the fake Chi-Chi tries to escape, ends up fighting the real Chi-Chi. Goku shows up, and what could have been funny, because Goku's supposed to be an idiot, and like, it's a thing you've seen in a million movies and TV shows about, I'm the real one, I'm the real one. So this could have been really funny, but it's not. Goku just knocks out his hopeful girlfriend and then gets shot with a regular gun. And he's almost killed. No, no, it would not kill him. And if you're telling me in this movie that he's like too fragile to handle a gun blast, I want to remind us that in the next scene, he's going to go head to head with Piccolo, who could crush a house with his bare hands without any effort. So I'm a little skeptical that a regular gun could bring him to the edge of death. Speaking which, Roshi uses a Kamehameha
Yes.
to br to heal him, and at the range he did that, which is on his chest, it should have killed him.
Yes.
And there are there's if again, sorry if you're not a Dragon Ball Z fan, but there is a mechanic in Dragon Ball Z, a small bean, a Sensu bean. You feed to a person, they heal. This would not be complicated to explain on screen. Roshi could be like, "Oh, I happen to have one in my pocket. The monks gave me one 2 minutes ago." I would have been fine with that. A healing machine. There's those in Dragon Ball Universe. But a Kamehameha meant the ultimate weapon meant to kill Piccolo in this movie? You're using it to heal? No, you don't get to have it both ways. No movie. Go to jail.
Oh my gosh. So while Goku was dead for a minute, he does see his grandfather Gohan again. He's like, so happy to see you. His grandfather's like, it's not your time, sends him back. But he does share, it's just like things are happening faster than they should. So he needs to get it together. Meanwhile, Goku is just like, all right, now that I'm back, we need to stop Piccolo once and for all, because Mai was able to steal every single Dragon Ball that was in their possession, meaning now that Piccolo has all the Dragon Balls. Another thing that happened that, I mean, is so quickly done that it just, honestly, I'm surprised I forgot about it. Goku's standard gi, the thing that the iconic gi that he wears, he does open it up. He sees it. He has it from his grandfather in an earlier scene. I'm like 90% sure that the logo was fake, though. It was something was off about the logo,
It was
which was like
FUBU.
So now that Piccolo has arrived at the Dragon Temple, because everybody knows this is where you go to for the Dragon Balls to be placed so that you can say the thing and summon Shenron. He arrives, everybody jumps into the fight. They do get the car, gets a little bit hit, and Goku's like, this will be a great time to change in the back of a Prius into my super suit. Which isn't really a super suit. And in fact, if you really look at the movement that he has with it, I feel like it probably would have slowed him down so much.
Yeah, and it doesn't really do anything because it even within the lore of the movie, we've never seen him wear this. We
Right.
don't we it's never established it's his grandfather's symbol or any symbol for that matter. And Goku never acknowledges that Piccolo killed Gohan. It never comes up. So it's not like I wore this for my grandpa, I'm here for revenge. No. No, there he's doing this for no reason. So now, as they go to stop Piccolo, I forget what order this happens, but let's get out of the way. Roshi tries the Mafu Ba, it fails, he dies. All right, moving on.
Actually, no. Roshi tries the Mafu Ba, but dies because Goku changes into Ozaru and kills Roshi.
Right.
Way you
That
explained it is the accurate way that it should have been done. And I appreciate the fact it was ingrained in your memory that that was your default.
I you, the crazy thing is I watched this movie like a day ago and I don't remember. I have notes and I must have been blacking out constantly. Speaking of blacking out constantly, Goku, the eclipse happens. You know, not like the eclipse that happened earlier this month. But don't, I hope he didn't turn into a great ape, because that's what happens with Goku. He turns into a great ape. How did Piccolo know that Goku would be here?
Yeah.
Thousands of years. Thousands.
I mean,
How?
somehow he's been plotting all this time when he was just magically released and they never told us how he was released. I mean, I feel like he was only released like a couple of days ago, to be honest.
Yeah, a lot. I guess he did his.
No,
It's not
we're not giving
explained.
no, we're not giving him any leeway on
Yeah.
this. I'm not doing
So Goku is in giant ape form. He kills Roshi, as mentioned. He menaces Yamcha a little bit. I to be honest, I don't know even want know why Yamcha's here. I know it's for the money, but he wouldn't no, he wouldn't be here.
feel like he at least he had more motivation than Batlash back in War World.
That's really not saying that much. Yeah, so Goku's doing the great ape thing, and then he just remembers that he's human and he stops. That's it. He's not a great ape anymore. So
This is a
sad.
very bad looking gray ape. He looks like a lichen from Underworld.
It does have that energy. These things are supposed to be massive. They're supposed to be Kongs, essentially. That's why they can destroy planets. It's that they're not the size of like a slightly bigger monkey. And yet normally you got to cut off their tail, which again, this is something that could have easily been incorporated, but it wasn't. So now Goku's back to normal, and it's time for his final fight with Piccolo. It's as exciting as we sound.
So yes, there's a little back and forth. It's much quicker than actually any Dragon Ball Z episode, to be honest. So as Goku is just like, I have already figured out that I am one. I am Uzaru. I am Goku. He says, I'm going to use these two personalities that I have to team up and take down you, Piccolo. And Piccolo's like, you won't stand a chance. So as the two battle it out, they're like exchanging blows, very few of them. They're exchanging ki blasts, very few of them. And or actually, I'm not can't call them ki blasts. I'm gonna call them ki throws because again, they just look like balls of wind being thrown at each other. We see now that Goku is about to die, and he's like, I gotta channel all of my anger from my friends dying, which was technically his fault, and all of my love for my friends, which is weird because you just met them not too long ago. So he's like, I gotta pull off the Kamehameha wave, which he does. He charges it up. King Piccolo is able to bring up his ki blast, and as they send them flying towards each other, another thing gets sent flying towards King Piccolo, and that is Goku, who, with both arms extended, breaks the laws of physics and is traveled with his Kamehameha wave up into the sky to give Piccolo the most devastating headbutt to the chest.
So, I want to try to give this movie a little grace. Okay? A little grace. When Goku faces King Piccolo in the traditional story, he at th this point in the battle, his both his legs and one of his arms is broken. And P King Piccolo is like, "You can't do anything. I'm going to kill you." So Goku says, "I have one hand left." And in one of the most epic moments in the series, he shoots a Kamehameha into the ground, propelling him forward and launching him through the body of King Piccolo, killing King Piccolo on contact. I see that that's what they were trying to do. However, they break the laws of physics to have a wave of energy propel you forward. No! Down, just if he turned his hands towards the ground, it would have been fine. Just why didn't anybody make in this game a shit? Why?
Like, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure this out. Just looking at it, you could tell that is off. Given the fact that the entire time that they explain it, it's treated as airbending. So if I put air in front of me, I should be unaffected by said air. However, if I put air behind me, get your minds out the gutter, whoever's listening and thinking that was a fart joke. But if I put air behind me, I should be able to move myself forward. So yes, like this was a weird take on the move. It was also a weird take that basically all that ends up happening is that Pink King Piccolo basically just gets knocked out. And as everybody is recovering, Mai was also taken out. I think she was shot in the back by Yamcha at one point.
Yeah, and also get your minds out of the
This is when they all crowd around the lifeless body of Roshi, and I think Yamcha or Bulma is like, man, I wish we could do something here. And it's like, oh, wish. And this is when we get the most cringe-worthy summoning of Shenron I've seen. Fun fact about this, I think that Christopher Sabat, who is typically the voice of Vegeta, was supposed to be the voice of Shenron, I believe, in this film. And they cut all the audio.
I honestly, I don't think if anyone had seen this beforehand, I think they would have respectfully been like, hey, actually, can you take you could take the check back. I'm good. Like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah. So, Shenron brings Roshi back to life. Surprising that in typical Dragon Ball fashion, they didn't just wish for everybody to come back to life like Grandpa Gohan. And
Man, dude.
I mean, also that whole entire village that Piccolo kind of destroyed.
What village?
So now they're celebrating. Bulma does see, though, like in typical Dragon Ball fashion, that all the Dragon Balls have scattered. Roshi comes back. He's like very upset that he was drawn back from heaven. And mainly because Grandpa Gohan told him that he has to go back to Earth because he has much more to teach Goku. And we don't see any of that training because we see that Goku has decided to just join into a fight where he meets up with Chi-Chi, apologizes for kicking her in the face and knocking her unconscious when he didn't know if it was Chi-Chi or Mai. And the two of them just enter into a sparring match, ending the movie with just one little credit scene left.
Little, because this post-credit scene was approximately 17 hours. In this post-credit scene, we see a woman walk in real time with a cup of tea to an unknown person, and they slowly turn around, and the unknown person is revealed to be Piccolo. No. That's all I'm going to say about that. No, that's the end of the movie.
We made it.
I think we've made it pretty obvious that none of this is accurate. I don't. I think we made it pretty clear the way they remix elements. About the only thing that's accurate, I think, is that the seven Dragon Balls summon Shenlong. I think that's the only thing they got right.
Yeah.
I don't think they got anything else right.
I mean, we got to tell y'all a little bit about the original. So in today's manga knowledge, I'm not going to go over the whole entire history of Dragon Ball from like the actual book and writings and chapters that Akira Toriyama has put together, but I'm going to give more of a lens for what was happening in the anime. Some things do differ, but it's not too drastic of a difference. Honestly, some of the anime actually added a bit more context to certain things or showed more things. Just starting off, let's level set with Dragon Ball first being inspired by the 16th century Chinese novel Journey to the West. And this also combines some elements of like Hong Kong martial arts films. So this whole entire story of Dragon Ball that Akira Toriyama put together is basically a retelling of almost a love letter to the story of the Monkey King. In fact, a lot of the attributes of the Monkey King, the comical take on him, the use of the stick that we I don't think it's ever actually shown in the film.
No, it isn't. He uses
Oh,
a
thank God.
sword. He uses a
Yes.
sword.
Oh, God.
What?
So yeah, a lot of it is inspired by the Monkey King storytelling. The series was created in 1984, so this now is celebrating its 40-year anniversary. And the initial manga of Dragon Ball was written and illustrated and was serialized in a weekly Shonen Jump from 1984 to 95, with just under about 200 individual chapters. And since then, it has grown and doubled that number in expanded storytelling and sequel series as we travel along and learn about Goku and his growth from child to man, understanding the ways of the world, but always making sure that, everybody could get it because his hands are E for everyone. In the original Dragon Ball series, I'm assuming that this movie tried to adapt and it's a weird fusion. This is like the fusion dance where they just basically their fingers just like kind of touched on top of each other versus connecting quite in the middle as you're normally supposed to. Between the first saga or arc of Dragon Ball, which is the Emperor Pilaf arc, and then the penultimate eighth saga or arc of Dragon Ball, the King Piccolo arc. So in the first one, this is chapters 1 through 23 or episodes 1 through 13 for people like ourselves who are growing up watching this. This serves as a lot of the introduction to our characters today, but obviously there were some very, very drastic changes that were taken. In the original story, as we mentioned, Goku never went to school. He was trained by his grandpa when he was younger. He was found by his grandpa. None of this stronger connection to Ozaru and all this. But he did notice that he did have a tail. That was the big thing about Goku. Like, we are first introduced to him peeing fully naked into a pond. And this is the thing that shows that, like, Goku isn't who we thought, isn't just a normal child. But we did learn from his grandfather that he told him to never look at a full moon and never really told Goku why. Notice I said full moon, not a solar eclipse. You're not supposed to look at that one either, but full moon comes up more regularly. His grandfather died before, and this whole thing about his grandfather dying, this happened a long time before any of the events. So as compared to the movie here, it's not just his grandfather died, he meets Bulma the very next day. Goku is like surviving on his own for quite some time and is treating the Dragon Ball that he's in possession of as his grandfather because it's what his grandfather wore on his head as a hat, part of like a hat when he was first trained by him. And when Bulma comes around, this is when she starts introducing the idea of like trying to find Dragon Balls because they're like a sense of energy and whatnot, and they could grant you wishes, which her wish is to find a hot boyfriend. And I could see why they probably took that one out of the film.
Yeah, it's funny because they try to give her a legitimate a reason to look for the Dragon Balls, infinite energy, but again, with the no one seems to be suffering from not having infinite energy, so it doesn't work. We can tell that you, at least in the manga, Bulma is suffering from not having a boyfriend. We get it. She's thirsty. She has a problem that needs to be solved, but here it's not apparent at all.
Yeah, nah. And speaking of that thirstiness, we do know that Bulma tries to entice Goku into giving her the Dragon Ball by saying that I'll give you a peek of my underwear. I think it was Dragon Ball was a little sexual, y'all, so we're gonna pass by that. We also meet up with Yamcha, who's not necessarily treated as much as the con artist that we saw here. One of the other biggest differences is that he does have the help of anthropomorphic shape-shifting cat, which I'm kind of shocked that no one thought about incorporating since they have so much use of CGI in this film, which would have been way better to include versus the fake demons that King Piccolo had, which looked nothing like the stuff on the show. There is also a love interest between the two of them. Obviously, they live happily ever after. No, I'm joking. She ends up getting with Vegeta. Like, Master Roshi was a bit more of a perv in the original story than he was here. I think they did hint at it with like him having what I'm assuming was like their version of a Sports Illustrated magazine. But I did find it weird when, and it's so weird for me to say this, I found it unlike him when he caught Bulma as they fell into the hole, and he immediately dropped her because he was just like, "Oh no, bad touch." And I was like, "What?"
Yeah, another problem, Bulma's age is never established in this movie.
Ooh, good point. Yeah.
In the original, she's 16 to 18, roughly. Goku's about 10. But yeah, we don't actually know how old she is at all in this movie. So, look, great that Master Roshi is learning to respect women, but he also hits on her very briefly. I don't know how old she is.
Yeah.
Hopefully 18.
But yeah, that's a good point. They only Goku has an actual age in this film. But yeah. But ultimately the first saga does end with them facing off against Emperor Pilaf. Well, actually not really facing off against Emperor Pilaf because Emperor Pilaf traps them. And it's just like, hey, going to have the son kill y'all, but actually what ends up happening is that night is a full moon, and this is when our group here of Yamcha, Bulma, and the others that they have picked up along the way see Goku transform into the great ape for the first time, and they realize that the only way that they can save him was by cutting off his tail. So when Goku reverts back to his normal self, this is when the group deduced that it was probably Goku who accidentally killed his own grandfather. And out of respect for his friendship and not trying to torment this child, they were like, we're not going to tell him the truth, which is the first arc of Dragon Ball, which makes sense. Totally makes sense. Like the transformations, all that kind of stuff. It's so wild and out there, but it makes sense. In between, we get some more stuff. Like we get introduced to Goku's best friend, Krillin. Goku takes on an army, the Red Ribbon Army. There's also a level of like Cobra Kai that comes out of it because Goku joins in a tournament. Well, he joins in several tournaments throughout this arc, this show. He faces off against a disguised version of Master Roshi. He also faces off against a Master Roshi's like rival in a sense, who also has his own students. So we get the true Cobra Kai storytelling where he meets Tien and Chiaotzu. But again, they become friends in the end. And then after this arc is when we get the King Piccolo arc, which is basically chapters 135 to 161, episodes 102 to 122 that took place 1987 to 1988. This is here when we get the full introduction to Piccolo, not the one that we love, the African Namekian who has raised Gohan.
Good
So in
father.
this, yes, great father indeed. This saga starts off with like right after that tournament where Goku has fought against Tien. They're celebrating there and they're just grabbing some dinner to eat, but Goku realizes that he forgot his staff over at the tournament. So Krillin, being the good friend, was just like, hey, I'm gonna go grab it, I'm gonna be right back, don't worry. But the entire time Goku is a little bit nervous, like he's on edge, just like, why is it taking Krillin so long? So when he goes to investigate, he comes up to the stage and finds Krillin dead on the floor. This is when we learn that King Piccolo is the person responsible for this. He was released by Emperor Pilaf, who, although is not in the movie, Emperor Pilaf has associates, one of which named Mai, who is our character in the film today. And I can see what they were trying to do with introducing this connection of how Emperor Pilaf was the one that released Piccolo, but they never explicitly said that Mai was the one that released him. I'm assuming that was the case. I also don't understand why is it that she was the one that ended up being teamed up with Piccolo. It's really weird in this.
She has no incentive to do this.
Right. There's no reason for her to be here. Like, are you from another planet? Do you want to, like, it would have honestly been more of a shocker if she was Ozaru.
Yeah, that would have been cool or, made some kind of sense, but she's just there. Originally, like they just say Pilaf, he just wants a, like a an island to rule,
Yeah.
It's a reciprocal relationship, but here it's nothing, just
Yeah.
the evilness of her heart, I guess.
Oh, and speaking of wishes, not only does Piccolo want like world domination and all that, but most importantly, his wish for the Dragon Balls is to have a younger body. I think I appreciate this a lot. It's actually a joke that I don't know if it's a joke, but I do think it does come up a couple more times in the future where in future storytelling where Bulma is like she wants the Dragon Balls to make herself look 5 minutes, five minutes or so, 5 months younger. Just
Yeah,
so it
very
says
subtle beauty changes that she
right.
makes. She just abuses the Dragon Ball for her beauty treatments.
So Piccolo wants it to be younger so he can continue on his battle. We do get the sense of like we do get the story that Piccolo did face off against Master Roshi's teacher, and Master Roshi's teacher was the one that did the evil containment wave, or the Mafu Ba as it's called, to trap Piccolo. And I believe it was in the rice cooker. Was that the first time or the second time?
Yeah, so it was a nice jar the first time. The second time they had access to a rice cooker,
Yes, okay.
and
because that story was well structured. On the way to the battle, the rice cooker is damaged and the Mafu Ba becomes impossible to pull off because there's a crack in the rice cooker. It's a caution. If that happens to your real rice cooker, fix it. So that's when Roshi can no longer pull it off successfully.
So, Roshi does end up sacrificing his life, unfortunately, in this effort. Since people are being killed left and right, Goku does get some training. There's an introduction of the Senzu Bean, which again should have been brought up in this film, been easily done. But during this time, Goku's like, I've been training hard enough. I'm ready to take on Piccolo. And he does, as we mentioned in the original ending of this arc of Dragon Ball, Goku ends up in this fight with King Piccolo. It leads to him getting both his legs and an arm broken. So Goku uses his last arm to propel himself using a Kamehameha wave because he's just like in a way that in terms of character development and storytelling, he has a reason to kill King Piccolo. King Piccolo has killed every single one of his friends and loved ones versus the guy who killed his grandfather, and his grandfather's never discussed again. And King Piccolo in the film is never taken accountable for that crime. And it ends with Goku, instead of giving a headbutt to Piccolo, he actually shoots himself through the entire body of King Piccolo. And for a quick explanation about this, King Piccolo is the evil essence of the Namekian Guardian of the Earth, Kami. Kami, in order to take on this role, had to expel all of his evil essence, and this is what turned it became the embodiment of King Piccolo. And they can regenerate. We saw it in the we never saw it in the film. I don't know why they never even tried to experiment with that. But in the original story, he can regenerate. But because Goku took out organs, this is why he can't regenerate. And effectively, he does kill King Piccolo, but not before King Piccolo shoots out an egg. I know this sounds weird, but like, bear with us. It does work in this world. He shoots out an egg from his body, and this egg contains his child, which will now be Piccolo Jr., which will then end up being the villain in the final arc of Dragon Ball and eventually become the Afro Namekian that we know and love once again to take care of Goku's son, Gohan. Piccolo is black. We're going to say it out loud for the crowd.
Yeah, he's the blackest character in Dragon Ball. There are
Yes.
no other ones.
There are no other ones at all. Yeah, that's how basically the Dragon Ball King Piccolo saga does end. Everybody gets wished back alive, including one side little story about the father of this little indigenous boy. It's kind of wild. Just watch it. It has some connection to the Senzu beans. So if you haven't seen Dragon Ball as of yet, I mean if you're watching a bunch of anime already, because honestly it's taking over a lot of our spaces. And we're all enjoying the stories that are being told from it. So if you haven't checked out Dragon Ball already, do so. I'm pretty sure that you have somebody out there has like an older brother, sister, sibling, cuts anything. They have definitely watched Dragon Ball. There are so many ways in which like I feel like Dragon Ball has like taken over and really got brought into our culture, especially for BIPOC individuals. I feel like we use the word brolic in association with Broly. That's my own personal belief.
No, it's 100% true. We
Okay.
definitely took that from them. And I'll accept no other explanation.
but yeah, that's the full-on story of Dragon Ball, at least the story that they were trying to tell in this film, that just didn't quite have the proper fusion. This is where we got Fat Gotenks, I'm assuming.
Yeah, just a miss. It's just a miss on all
Just a mess.
accounts. Normally, this is where I could pull in some behind the scenes insights about what went wrong here. Not much, except Hollywood just being dumb. Just originally in the 90s, Jackie Chan wanted to play Goku, and he
Oh,
was
wow.
down for it, but he also believed that no budget existed that could properly do it justice. And Jackie Chan knows his stuff.
Once 20th Century got the live action rights to make it, they tried to make it with Stephen Chow of Kung Fu Hustle fame, the director. And he ultimately was like, I'm just going to produce. I'm not going to direct this. They offered Robert Rodriguez and Zack Snyder
Oh, God.
the Dragon Ball opportunities, and they both passed. The writer wrote a draft that was deemed too expensive, so six more drafts of the script were written, and we got what we got. A lot of the movie was shot in an abandoned jeans factory.
What?
I love that fact about this. And the last but certainly not least, Akira Toriyama offered numerous times during the process to help iron elements out, to streamline, to help in any way. He did caution them that the path they were going on was so far away from Dragon Ball, but they did not heed his advice. So you got what you got. We get what we get, and we can get upset because
Yes.
it barely resembles anything Dragon Ball. So with all that in mind, this is going to be a nail biter. Is this a cape or cap for you?
This thing got more of a cap than Piccolo had during the intro to the Future Trunks Android arc, honestly. Yeah, this is. I was really, if I was kind of hoping for this one. I mean, I know that has always been considered one of the worst films to be ever produced of all time. But again, like all of these movies that we're going through for Cape or Cap, we're hoping that maybe there is some kind of diamond in this rough exterior of this film. Fortunately, it just couldn't find one here. And I'm not just coming at it as saying that like it was totally inaccurate to what it was. Like a lot of my claims were of the inaccuracy compared to what is the original storytelling. But it just feels like a lot of the storytelling just didn't work out here, even if you just changed the characters or had a different kind of mindset. The main issues that I saw with the film were like character utilization, like Chi Chi, honestly, as you're hearing Chi-Chi explain her story, she basically has the same thing as Goku. But she doesn't pro they don't provide any of the context for her. So, and she basically disappears about halfway through the film. Once she gets knocked out, we never really see her again. And granted, she's not supposed to be for the final fight, but then it's like she pops up randomly throughout the film, and it almost feels it's like, are y'all following Chi-Chi? Or does she just happen to be gravitating towards these moments? Like it doesn't get properly explained. The other thing too is just like the bullied Fuller and his boys, like it feels like they were just introduced to fight Goku so that they could show us that Goku can fight, which honestly was already explained when you're showing him doing all these kinds of trainings. Like he could have stumbled, he could have fallen, but at the end of the day, he has the knowledge in his back of his mind to be like, hey, I can still at least throw a punch really well. And if that was the case, that's it. Like, you didn't need to include Goku trying to fight off against these guys. And then, because, like, basically, when he fights against his grandfather, it's a great enough fight that it's just like he doesn't technically lose, but he just loses because he was tricked. And for his battle with Master Roshi, yeah, it's like significantly done better, honestly, better than his fight with Fuller and his guys, because at the end of it, we actually do see that Goku is showing off a full extent of his full capabilities. We see increased speed, increased strength, the ability to use Ki Wind Gust, even though he uses it on Bulma instead of actually hitting his target, which is another characterization of Goku I did not like because Goku tends to always try to make sure to fight when not too many people are around. Or even when anybody's around, they always try to move the fight to an area where there is the least amount of an like structural damage. So yeah, I think that's just like it feels like a lot of characters were introduced for the sake of name or to try to pull some story along, but it just doesn't work. The other thing I had an issue with was the special effects. I'm kind of glad you brought up Zack Snyder because it was like there are so many random uses of slow-mo, which I'm starting to realize I'm starting to hate. Because everybody uses slow-mo to show a character doing something cool, whereas like you could easily take that money and put it into something better. Because like the other thing that just the thing that just, like I brought it up with like Tobey Maguire and Spider-Man 1 dodging the Flash's punch, that's a slow-mo shot, but you're seeing him recognizing his increased speed in that moment versus Goku does a flip to dodge two people trying to hit him with crowbars. And it's like we could have easily just kept that at normal speed and just shown the impact of the hit and save some money, put it into creating some more characters. And the last thing that just really upset me was the storytelling. I feel like we had no motivation for Piccolo to be on this, like, I'm going to destroy Earth in here. It's explained so much more. It explains who frees him, explains why he's doing this. Here's just like he came to Earth and just wanted to destroy things with Uzaru, and the two of them were doing terrible things. And that's just it. As you're watching this film, honestly, I was thinking about this, like, they basically wanted to give the Great Saiyan arc story and give it to Goku, but it just doesn't work when you think about how those two characters are just so different. Goku's Gohan, Chi-Chi is Videl. Like, even like the whole entire story is just trying to get us to feel like Goku is exactly like Gohan, and that has never been the case. It's been talked about through these stories. It's like they're different in their own ways. In fact, Gohan's supposed to be stronger. So I really wish that what they would have done is just tell us the Gohan story if they really wanted to use these elements, because that's what would have made more sense, especially if you're like coming right off of the hype of Dragon Ball Z. These are the things that people are going to recognize. No, I mean, people want to see Goku fight, but like you could have just put the Great Saiyan arc in the film at a point where like superhero movies were being pooped out left and right, and we would have been totally okay with that. But yeah, I guess I do have to end on one positive note about this film. I mean, I'm supposed to, it's my, I had to include it because I felt bad about going so much on this. Hair and makeup for Piccolo is so great. I'm surprised I didn't realize it was James Marsters who was playing this man all these years.
Could have
So
won an Oscar. Could have
could
been
have
right
won an
up there with
Oscar.
Suicide Squad, you know?
But what about you? Cape or cap?
No cap. I mean, come on. I mean, this. I you know, going into this, I tried to look at it. What if this is just a movie? What if this is not an adaptation of one of the most famous anime fiction stories of all time? Even taking the legacy of Dragon Ball away, this movie fails at everything it tries. None of the characters are really that likable. Chi-Chi is just there as a function of the plot. Bulma is just there as a plot. Yamcha is a joke, but he doesn't really have anything else going on with him. All the characters feel paper thin. It's a movie about fighting, but there are no good fight scenes in this movie. Just there's nothing like. We can say a lot of stuff, but Dark Phoenix had some really impressive action scenes. Before that, Suicide Squad, there was some fun fight choreography, especially with Harley Quinn. So it just the fact that we couldn't get one good fight out of this movie is crazy. In a series that's about fighting, it's about fighting, guys. You could have taken panel from panel and just recreated any one of the fights from Dragon Ball, and I would have said, okay, great. But the fighting is terrible. Plot is incoherent. There's no fixes. There's no band-aids you can put on this. This movie is this version of the script, dead on arrival. I don't know what happened in between those six drafts. I imagine it must have been hell to keep going back and back. But there were two, they tried to do too much and also not enough. It just, Chi Chi should not have been here at all. Just to make room and give enough time for the characters to really flesh out. More Bulma, more Roshi, more Yamcha, more Gohan, if you're going to Uncle Ben him. Yeah, there's really nothing about this movie I liked. I can't even recommend it as a joke. It just is not good. It's just not good. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry on behalf of everyone. I'm sorry. This one, not the worst thing we've seen on this particular podcast, but certainly if I were ranking the movies we've seen so far, this would be not below the bar, but this would be in hell. This would be in hell.
Yeah, it's a shame. But the good things about this is that since this movie has come out, many of the people who are involved have apologized. Especially as of most recent apology came from the star who played Goku, who upon the death of Akira Toriyama, did put out a post, and Justin Chatwin stated that he's very appreciative of what Akira Toriyama has put together, has created, has honestly created a story that for generations has just encaptured us and we love so much. And actually, and then followed up with an apology for what he did to his work. So I do appreciate the fact that the people who are involved are recognizing that they did do a little bit of hurt here. And I'm hoping that this is just a sign that, like, and I think it was. I think it real truly was, because I think that we're only 4 years into 2020, the 2020s. But since then, I feel like we've been getting some great adaptations of anime storytelling in the more on the West side, especially when it's just like this is worlds, these are worlds being created almost nonstop, and people are loving them. So it's good to see that when mistakes are happening, people are apologizing for it, and knowing that like there are opportunities to continue making sure that there isn't another Dragon Ball Evolution, there isn't another Avatar: The Last Airbender from M. Night Shyamalan, or well, how do you call him in that movie? I was like, Ong. And there
No,
isn't.
again, we're not doing it.
So when you hear about these movies that are now getting opportunities to still hopefully be forgotten by time, but you know, still have it that they're continuing on with greater stories, greater things, like Dragon Ball still going on. There's still some stories that they're wrapping up or putting together, and there's still going to be movies, shows that you can always look back on and watch all of this stuff to relive it from your younger ages, to share it with a friend, sharing it with the next generation. You know, it's a point where now we're just like we have big threes and everything, and that's always going to be a story that helped change the world of like the kind of media that we're going to be absorbing in the future. So thank you, Akira Toriyama, for everything that you have done to create these stories that we all know and love, and creating these characters that we just connect with and sometimes even try to channel in our everyday lives.
Yeah, and I'm glad that this movie did not dampen the enthusiasm for the series, and that when Akira returned to it, people were still willing to embrace it, put the past behind, and go on. So, you know, we definitely owe Dragon Ball a lot. We definitely res all respect to Akira Toriyama. May someone never do this to your work again.
All right, with that, we're going to wrap up our episode. Join us next week for the last episode within our bonus season of Cape or Cap, as we cover something that has honestly have been asked of us for quite some time. You have heard our disdain about this film. We're jumping right back into the animated front with Batman Ninja.
Let's go.
Be sure to support us either through one-time donations through Buy Me a Coffee or monthly support through Patreon. Check us out on our socials for updates on our episodes that you can find across Apple, Spotify, YouTube, and many other platforms. Take care of yourselves and remember that if you're gonna get into a fight at high school, don't, I guess really the most important thing is don't let it be against a guy that has a Camaro and like 40 other dudes just randomly pop up. I just don't fight in high school. How about that?
Yeah, and if you fall into a hole in the middle of the desert, ask your friends if you can get out of the hole or before you do like starve or burn to death. I don't know if you need sunscreen, but your friend needs to get you out of that hole
Yeah.
for sure.
Thanks again for listening. If you liked what you heard, leave a review and share us with a friend. Also, be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcasts and on social media at YADC Animated Pod.